Welcome to Nattering with the Knights, North Anglia International School Hong Kong's PE department, talking about sport, physical activity, health, and a host of other topics. This week I am joined by professional golf caddy Scott Carmichael, who has been a caddy on the European Tour since May 2017. We discuss the role of the caddy in the professional game, and Scott shares some of his stories since being involved with working with various high-end professional sports people. He's also had the joy of caddying for one of golf's greatest ever players, and we also discuss how COVID-19 has impacted himself and others in professional sport in the last 12 months. This is a really insightful podcast, guys, so we hope you enjoy it. So as always, get up and get active, get the earphones in, and enjoy. This week, I am joined by Scott Carmichael, who is a professional golf caddy and has been working for a variety of golfers on the European Tour since May 2017. Scott was a high-quality golfer himself, going to Johnson & Wales University, which is in Miami, USA, on a golf scholarship for 4 years. After completing his scholarship, he returned to the UK for work in London before turning his hand to caddying in March 2017. Scott, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. So you're in the Middle East this week working. What tournament are you at? Who are you working for on this occasion?
So this week is the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. However, it's a run of three events. So last week I was in Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. And then next week going to Saudi Arabia for, I believe it's called the Saudi International. So a nice 3 week stretch of tournaments. And I'm working for a New Zealand player called Ryan Fox, who I am just actually filling in for his normal caddy, who is unable to go due to COVID issues.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, we'll get into the nitty gritty of COVID and how it's impacted your work. First of all, our listeners who are maybe a little bit unfamiliar with the role of the caddy in golf, can you talk me through what the role is, why it's so important, and basically why you've got a job?
Well, first of all, it's more than just carrying the bag of what you might just see on the television. So obviously the main sort of role is, you know, doing yardages, giving sort of sound advice, that advice ranging from where the player should go off the tee, what clubs are hitting off the tee, wind direction, and then obviously once the hole goes on, from the fairway, from the rough, what types of shot the player should hit, what shot shouldn't hit, where the good misses, where they really can't miss, round the greens, sometimes helping read putts, sometimes not. That's very much up to a player's discretion. And of this, not really the psychology of it, because we're not psychologists, but, you know, just trying to keep your player in the right frame of mind, you know, on both sides of the coin, when things aren't going as well, you know, trying to keep them positive, keep them, yeah, just trying to get them sort of not overthinking about what's actually going on just now. And again, when things are going well, keeping them sort of relaxed and loosened, not necessarily thinking about the bigger picture that might happen from them playing so well in that particular day.
Okay, nice one. I'm laughing there because I'm thinking of my limited experience as a caddy, mainly from my dad. And back in the day, I obviously delved sometimes in the wrong roads, you know, thinking I knew what to say at the right moment. Yep. And it was obviously the wrong thing to say. Have you had any of those moments? I assume maybe ones you cringe about now.
Yeah, you do a little bit. Yeah, I remember my first year caddy, and I actually can't even remember what I said. He had a really bad double bogey. I think it was on the first or second hole of the day, and I basically said something along the lines of, "It's okay, we've got plenty of holes to go," or something like that. I genuinely can't remember what I said word for word, and he just absolutely went through his head and just lost his. He lost the plot with me, which was quite amusing. However, he did birdie the next hole, so I must have said something that stuck. But I remember after that round, he was like, "Scott, just whatever, just you don't need to say anything like that on the golf course." I was like, "Oh, okay, no problem, I won't." But that's the thing about this job. It's very much, there's no there's no blueprint for it. It's very much all on the job experience, and that experience just gets, you know, you just get better at the job as the experience kicked in, you know.
Yeah, and I'd imagine different people, very much different characters as golfers. They will be competitive athletes.
Yeah,
they'll probably respond very differently to different advice.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've now worked for a handful of different golfers now, and yeah, it's safe to say not any one of them is the same. They're all very different. They all want everything slightly different. And yeah, that's actually something I learned quite quickly after like a year, and I'd worked for a handful of different guys, just 1 week jobs here and there in some instances. And you're just like, these guys just want, while they're all trying to achieve the same goal, all go about it a completely different way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's backtrack a little bit from the caddy and talk about your original involvement in golf as a youngster. Mm-hmm. So obviously you would have played a lot when you were young to get the level that you got to, and probably, I assume, multiple hours in a week to do that. So what got you started in golf, and where did you go from there, really?
So I started playing really young, like not a lot, although. And my dad that got me involved, my dad has always been a very keen golfer. He was a very good golfer when he was younger. But it wasn't until I was about 10, 11 years old when my family moved to another part in Edinburgh, and who's still one of my best friends, played a lot of golf as well. And basically me and him just started playing loads. And then when I was about 12, I started playing competitively. I joined the golf course my dad was a member at, and started playing competitions and playing for your handicap and the rest of it that goes with that. And yeah, I mean, obviously through the summer holidays especially, you would never see me not on the golf course, easily playing two rounds a day. I remember there was one day I think I played 3.5 rounds in a day. I don't think my body could quite manage that now, but it was those were the days.
Yeah, I mean, I recall that was the best babysitting service on the planet. I was a member of my club as well, and from the age of maybe 11 or 12, got dropped off by my dad on the way to his work in the morning. And then my mum would pick me up sometime in the mid-afternoon and play around the rest of the time in the putting green. And unfortunately, didn't quite get the development that I thought I would get to. Maybe you did. You obviously did a little bit better than me, but you maybe put in a few more hours as you did. So you were in Edinburgh in the UK. So how then did the progression come to that Miami became an option for a scholarship?
Yeah, so quite interesting, actually. So I left high school with okay grades, nothing fantastic, but okay grades. And I decided I didn't want to go to university in the UK. And I started working in a golf shop, basically on the idea of, we'll see how this is, and I'll either go down the PGA route and do my PGA, work in a golf shop, coaching, etc., or I'll go to America and do a golf scholarship. And there's a number of agencies that sort of help you basically market yourself to US college coaches. And yeah, basically got in touch with one of them, and sort of about a year later, I got offered a scholarship in Miami, and I'd actually been offered a job at Turnberry in the west coast of Scotland. And well, yeah, needless to say, Miami Beach kind of was a better option over the west coast of Scotland at that time.
So, I mean, that, to be fair, Turnberry is not a bad option though either. So that's when we first kind of met each other, was in between your returns to Edinburgh.
It was.
When I was at university, and obviously you were in Miami. And while we probably didn't talk too much about golf as such, and we definitely didn't talk about academics, now I can ask you that. So how did you balance the balance of the golf, which obviously I assume you were putting in a ton of hours into? How did you balance that with the academic side of things?
It worked quite well at my university. I know every university differs slightly of how their academics work, but I was able to do my classes for the week in two full days. So I would have classes start, I think it was as early as 7:30 in the morning, and that would be till, I think, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And it would be four classes a day of 2-hour blocks. which worked quite well because it obviously gave you the rest of the week to play and practice, which was great. And, you know, you were still able to potentially practice a little bit in the evenings after after university, your university day had finished. But, you know, sometimes, you don't ever want to overdo it, and balance is what you need. And I think actually the older I've got, I've sort of realised that more than I definitely did. Well, how many years ago was 12 years ago now? So, and then obviously if you've got some big university stuff as well that you need to do, then you just obviously, you make the time for it in the evenings, and you do have your evenings yourself. Because something that I kind of never realised before I got there was that, especially in Florida, you don't get the light evenings like you do in Scotland. So by the time 6 p.m. comes, it is pitch black, and that's your golf done for the day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, because you were on the golf team, if you were away for tournaments and you had to miss class, your professors, for the most part, were quite relaxed about it because you were obviously representing the university for sport. And yeah, the American sort of universities do love that sort of stuff. So again, for the most part, your professors were quite understanding if you had to miss any classes or tests or anything like that. And you can obviously always had the time to make up for it when you came back from tournaments. So that was quite good too.
And what were you studying at university?
I studied business management. I was at university I was at was really quite a small university. There was only about 2,500 students at that campus, which was quite good. But at the same time, obviously the actual amount of courses I had to choose from was quite limited. But I enjoyed business in high school, and just went forward with that when I got to university, and it was good. It stood me well for when I actually had a normal job after graduating for a while.
A normal job, that is, he said it. And so when you kind of rounded up at university, did you hold aspirations to still keep playing golf? Was that still a target of yours?
So obviously when I went to university, it was, I was obviously going there on the prospect of hopefully turning pro, maybe straight after graduating, maybe a little bit after that. And still for the first sort of 2.5, maybe even 3 years. But then when I got to my final year, I wasn't playing very well. I think I just kind of probably just fell out of love with the game a little bit in my last year and wasn't really putting the work in that was required on the golf course to perform on the course as well as I knew I could. So that final year sort of started changing things up in terms of what I was trying to do once graduating, etc. And that was that. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you go out there, you're wanting to give it a shot. You're wanting to turn professional, and it isn't sometimes until you sort of see how good certain other players are, and sometimes gives you a bit of a reality check. And for that, you need to work harder. And I thought I was working hard enough, but in hindsight, probably wasn't.
And then, so obviously, you've left university, you've come back to the UK, picked up some, as you said, a normal job in London. So when did then caddying become a viable option for you?
Well, a good story, actually. So about a year after graduating, so I'd been back in Edinburgh for about a year, just I think I was doing a bit of bar work and just trying to figure out what I was wanting to do. And so about a year later, a Scottish pro called Chris Doak asked me to caddy for him in an event in Madeira, which is an island just outside on Portugal. And so I've done that, but basically the week before I had done a few interviews down in London and been offered a job. So anyway, he had a good week. I think he finished like 15th or 16th. And he asked me to do the next couple of weeks caddying for him. And I basically said, thanks, but, you know, I've just been offered a job in London. I better sort of do a normal job for just now. So I did that, went to London and did that for like 2.5 years, give or take. And just for me, I just didn't really enjoy the sort of Monday to Friday sort of structure as such, the schedule as such. I've obviously played golf for so many years and decided to leave London, came back home, started local caddying at a Renaissance club. So I was caddying for sort of the tourists, the members, etc. through the summer. And I was trying to get, it was the goal of getting on tour and caddying in the professional ranks because, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. And I'd always kind of had it in the back of my head, obviously from caddying for Chris that week. I really did enjoy it. I'd done a little bit of caddying when I was in the States as well for a few guys. Eventually in 2017, got the chance to caddy on the Challenge Tour through one of my friends who was already caddying. I'd done tour school the year before for just a couple of guys that I didn't really know, quite random really, and just really wanted to do it. And then, yeah, finally got my chance at the start of the 2017 season on the Challenge Tour. And yeah, been out here ever since.
And so it's almost like when you get into the circuit, is that like you almost can stay there even if you're not necessarily holding a regular player down? Is it almost like once you're in the circle, you're going to be used more regularly?
Yeah, especially on the Challenge Tour, which is the tour below the European Tour. Again, pre-COVID times, it's obviously a little bit different now, but pre-COVID times, you know, you don't have to take a caddy on the Challenge Tour. And it's a good way to sort of gain experience. There's a few caddies on that tour anyway. But it's a good way to gain experience just to learn how it all works, how the professional ranks work, because it is different, how each player practices. And again, the Challenge Tour is sort of a mix of your young rookie pros or your slightly older pros who are still trying to make it on the tour or kind of are in between both tours. And there's even guys who have been on tour, the European Tour, for years and just had a couple of bad years and they're back down on the Challenge Tour. It's a real good mix of players, and from that you do learn a lot of basically what is needed from a caddy, because as we sort of touched on earlier, there's things you certainly learn a lot along the way.
And so apart from obviously getting your head ripped off after the first hole in one of your first, do you have any other kind of memories of early experiences from your caddying?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first job. So the first guy I worked for, he's actually a really nice guy. He's now a manager. He was Danish, and it was definitely a bit of a struggle sometimes just sort of finding conversation. But yeah, a lot of guys, something that most guys do have in common, again, not across the whole field, but for the most part, you know, they just want a conversation. They just want something to take their mind off it, and just trying to find conversation just in between shots and just take their mind off it. So that's something I've definitely learned over the years, and something I learned quite quickly, because with Mark, it was sometimes just a language barrier. Sometimes made it sometimes a bit harder. And just actually not being worried about the result. If you basically disagree with your player on something, for the most part, say it, and not for an argument, but actually, you know, try to justify why you think it is a 7-iron rather than the 8-iron they have in their hands, or why you think it is a driver off that tee rather than, say, a 2-iron that they're about to hit, or vice versa. And just be strong and confident with the decision that you're wanting to make, or wanting the player to make.
And so I'll piggyback. I've just thought of a question I wanted to ask. So who's the most famous player that you've been, not necessarily caddying for, but in the same group as? Because obviously usually in golf it goes out in groups of three or two balls towards the end of the weekend. Is there anybody really noteworthy who's been in one of your groups?
Yeah, so the Irish Open in 2019, I was working for Grant Forrest. I'd had a good good 3 days, actually. Shot 65 on the Saturday, and we played with Robert Rock on the Saturday, and he shot 60, which was very impressive. He actually had a putt for 59, which was very cool to watch. And then the next day, we were paired with John Rahm, who ended up winning the tournament. Right. And John shot 62 that day to win the golf tournament by... I actually can't remember how many he won it by, but I think it was like three or four shots in the end. I mean, we were doing well in that tournament, but we were maybe in like the fourth or fifth last group. So by no means like leading the golf tournament, and he's just played, the golf he played is incredible. And then obviously it's the Irish Open, which brings massive crowds as well. And over the last few holes, the crowds just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. I know we had a good week as well. We actually, it was one of his Grant's best weeks money-wise on tour that, but up to that point. Not his best finish, but because it was a big Rolex Series event, the money was very good. So I finished outright 13th. And actually, a couple, two or three shots more actually would have made this, got a spot in the Open. But, you know, under the circumstances, you know, that was his first year on the European Tour playing with somebody like John Rahm, who he actually knew. He played college golf with him. But, you know, even at this point, this is still 2 years ago, and John Rahm was still one of the biggest names in golf. And so he held his own, and that was a cool experience.
And so, that was one of my next questions, obviously, about your kind of, you seemed to almost hold down a bit of a role with Grant Forrest for a little bit longer. And obviously that was one of the highlights of his season. How else did he obviously had a fair bit of success that year. Mm-hmm. How else did you fare up in other tournaments? Anything noteworthy?
Yeah, so, well, the first year I worked for him was on the Challenge Tour. So we actually came out on tour at the same time, coincidentally enough. And even though he's from the same area, he's from North Berwick, I knew who he was, but we only met when the year before on Challenge Tour, just being in the same groups, etc., and just through mutual friends. But I started to work for him at the start of the 2018 season on the Challenge Tour, and we had a few European Tour starts that year as well, but it was, the goal was Challenge Tour, finishing the top 15 to get a European Tour card. So that year, basically, that went well. Finished seventh on the order of merit without winning. We had 3 seconds that year and got beaten 2 playoffs. Well, 1 playoff, one was a match play event, which he got to the final of. And then with the third last event of the year in China, in Hainan Islands, basically it was, I think, I can't actually remember where he was in the order of merit, but he was in the top 15, but obviously the last of the events were big money, and you needed a big result to finish the top 15. And first round came out firing and shot 10 under and was 10 under through the first 11 holes of that golf tournament. So that was quite cool. And while we led after the first round, we finished second that week, but the second was good enough to confirm top 15. And yeah, he ended up finishing seventh, the order of merit, which got him his card. And then, yeah, a couple other good finishes on the following year on in the European Tour, finished top 10 in Mauritius, which was actually the start of the season. I think that was maybe the second. Yeah, actually, that was the second event of the European Tour season, because the week before we were in Hong Kong. We went from Hong Kong to Mauritius and played well in Hong Kong, which is the first event of the year. Then Mauritius, played well, finished top 10, which is nice. And then another good result was in Morocco, where I believe finished 6th or tied 6th. But again, we were tied for the lead through 9 holes in the final round. And then I think a Spanish player ended up not running away with it, but playing very well down the back nine and won by like 3 or 4 in the end, I think. So that was a really good experience. That was the first time he'd really sort of been in contention as well. And obviously, while not winning, definitely held his own in that environment, which was cool.
And obviously, that, I remember we last time we met was maybe 2 years ago, I think it was. And you were talking about some of these elaborate trips where you're going from place to place. And obviously, you just rung off about 3 or 4 different countries in a row there. Mm-hmm. But then that was in the current situation. We've talked about this before we kind of started recording, but
yeah,
COVID, how has that travel been impacted? Was there not even a section where golfers weren't allowed caddies when things reopened? Did I read that correctly?
So on the European Tour and the PGA Tour, so the main tours, and thankfully caddies have always been, we've been allowed, and they've been taking caddies. The smaller tours, so like the Challenge Tour, I'm not quite sure how the caddy situation works in America on the web.com tour, the Korn Ferry Tour. And on the LPGA tour, caddies haven't been mandatory either. But thankfully, we have been in the process of everything that's going along with it. So, yeah, obviously it has affected. Last season, the schedule got completely changed. We played a lot of events in the UK, which we had never done before, so that was actually quite nice. But the travel, I actually still travelled quite a bit last year, believe it or not. But with everything that's going on right now, it's quite difficult, really, just to get flights. I mean, we're meant to be going to, well, we are going to Saudi Arabia next week, but the flight back on the Sunday to Dubai has been cancelled to the Monday. And yeah, there's guys who then have connecting flights, and it's just, I mean, it's complete first world problems, but there's guys obviously stressing out about missing a flight back from Dubai to wherever they're going home to. And yeah, it's throwing a few curveballs out there, but yeah, at the end of the day, we're out here working and nothing we can't deal with.
And so you explained to me the kind of system of the bubble. So talk our listeners through what's happening with the kind of bubble to just try and protect you guys and almost allow you to be exempt from quarantine.
Yeah, basically. So we arrive to a tournament, we'll get tested on arrival. We then basically get given a different lanyard, which says that we're not allowed to go indoors at the golf course, but we are allowed to be on the range and on the golf course waiting for our negative results to come back. Once we get to our hotels, if we've still not got our results, we have to go straight to our hotel rooms, and then we can only order room service for that night. Once we get our negative results back, which, I mean, obviously, most weeks, the vast majority do come back negative. We're then allowed to eat in the hotel. But even when we're in the hotel, we're not actually allowed to eat with anybody random. We're sort of in a buddy system. So it's normally with your player or with one other caddy or one other player, and that's it. So they are being pretty strict on it, but it's worked well. I mean, the tour and the head doctor, guy Edinburgh actually, Andrew Murray, they've done a fantastic job basically getting this all organised and in a way where we can go to other tournaments, other countries, and sort of, this is what we do, this is how it's working. And for the most part, as long as we can actually get into the country, normally we're able to get a golf tournament going.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So I'm glad to see you're still keeping busy. And so then kind of tailing off towards more thinking about longer term, and again, that's maybe hard to do in this current situation, but what are your kind of your future aspirations in the sport? What do you hope to do in the kind of medium to longer term?
Yeah, so I think like any caddy, you want to be caddying in the top golf tournaments. I don't really hide the fact that I do want to get back out to the States. I do want to caddy on the PGA Tour. I really enjoy America. And while I do love the European Tour, and if I'm out here for the rest of my career, absolutely no issues with that whatsoever. But, you know, at the end of the day, you want to be caddying in the majors, the WGCs, and obviously in turn, if you're doing them, then and caddying for a European, obviously would have hopefully a small chance of one day caddying in a Ryder Cup, which I think would be one of the best experiences ever. But that'll be a long time away still. Obviously only been out here for a few years and still got to get a few more years under my belt before an opportunity like that ever comes my way.
So funny that, because we did a PE department kind of podcast, one of the last episodes we did, and I was a quiz master, but it was passing around the table and it was like, what sport do you most enjoy playing and watching? And I went right around the table, and obviously it came to me, and the guy before me said he enjoys watching football, and in terms of his own activity was running. And I was like, I can't just keep copying. I copied his last three answers, so I was kind of panicking. And obviously I wanted to say, okay, well, I play football still. And then I said, the sport I enjoy watching the most was golf. And literally the whole table were disgusted. They were almost, and I was like, guys, have you watched the Ryder Cup? And a few of them were like, well, yeah. I was like, so when you said the Ryder Cup, I was going, aha. I mean, if you were a caddy, that would just be epic.
Yeah.
As long as it was a Ryder Cup in normal circumstances, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they get any... I'd imagine there'll be some crowds in the Ryder Cup in America. Is it Denver, I think it is, or over. There will be some... There'll be an element of a crowd, but it won't... I can't... Who knows? But I can't imagine it'll be the tens of thousands that flood onto the golf course for normal Ryder Cups. But hopefully there's enough people there to make it a decent atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, so we... in this season of the podcast, we've tried to keep a little bit of continuity by asking the same questions at the end to all of our guests. So we call it the quick-ish fire round, because the idea it should be quick, but often some of our guests like to elaborate on their answers, which is absolutely fine. Some of the questions don't really allow for it, so if you can elaborate on them, I would be impressed. Sure. So, first thing that comes to mind for favourite food?
Steak.
Medium rare? Rare?
Medium rare, sometimes rare. Depends where I'm at.
Okay. Interesting fact.
I don't eat vegetables.
Oh, I do remember this.
Yeah, no, that's not changed. That's not come with age.
Wow, no vegetables. Okay. Favourite holiday destination?
I don't really go on holiday all that much. However, I would probably say... Southeast Asia, Bali. I went travelling there and I really enjoyed it, and I'd like to go there and back there on an actual holiday. It would be fantastic.
Favourite gadget?
Again, don't have many of them. Can I say as something as boring as my phone? Because it's literally the only gadget I have.
Hey, well, if it's essential, you know, if you're a busy man on it.
Aye, exactly. No, joking aside though, I'm not really one for a lot of technology, so unfortunately it's going to have to be a pretty boring answer there.
Okay, no, that's fine, absolutely. Favourite book?
Trainspotting.
Okay, classic.
Yep.
Most famous person met? You must have a couple here.
Yeah, right, well, I was thinking about this, and yeah, I do, but I don't really, I kind of forget about it because I kind of do just forget about it. Golf-wise, I've caddied for Gary Player before, which was a cool experience. I mean, he was one of the all-time greats. Just for a one-round thing, he was at Archerfield in East Lothian. So in terms of golf, Gary Player. And in terms of just outright celebrity, I have been on the background of a Skype call with Alex Rodriguez and Cameron Diaz before.
Interesting.
I don't know if that really means it's me, because it was, yeah.
If it's in the back of a Skype call though, in this current climate, that would be defined as me and them, I feel.
Yeah, unfortunately this was when I was at university, so it was a good 12 years ago, but it was like a business meeting for the guy I was doing an internship with.
Right. Well, there you go. That's a good one to hang your hat on. If you were an animal, what would you be?
I would be I like dogs, so I'll go for dogs.
Loyal, reliable.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
Absolutely.
If you could get yourself anything at all in the world, what would it be?
So I have said to myself, if I have a big win on tour, I would buy myself a Ford Mustang. So I'll go with that.
Wow, a Mustang. Interesting. Yes. That's going to have to be a big win on tour.
Yes. Well, yeah. Maybe. It depends if I get an old rattled one.
And then our last question is, biggest life lesson you could share in under 60 seconds to our listeners?
So, yeah, basically I'll go back to when I was playing golf in college, and I think just work as hard as you can at your desired, whether it's sport or if it's your job, if your career, and just if you think you're working hard, you work harder and just keep going at it. Persistence is massive, and having that persistent determination, for me, it will get to you where you want to go, and just having that self-belief.
Nice.
Comfortably under 60 seconds, but There you go.
It was. No, that's absolutely fine, because we've had one that's gone comfortably over, so it's nice to keep within the rules of the game. And obviously one question that I didn't even ask was about your own, I mean, in terms of your own playing, have you been getting much of your own time playing in the course, or is that you kind of hung up the clubs?
No, I still play a wee bit. I'll go through phases over the year of when I really do get the golf bug, and then other times I'm not overly bothered. However, yeah, I still play a bit. So I try to play as much competitive golf as I can back home. Obviously, last year was a little bit different with everything that was going on. If I can, I'll play as much as I can when I get home. Again, it's very much schedule-wise. It's very difficult to play like your big competitions at the golf club, like your club championships, because you normally need at least 2 weeks. You normally need a week off for the qualifier, which is a weekend, and then the actual club championship itself is like a week or two later, and the chances of me actually being off both those weeks is normally...
When it's peak golf season for the pros, yeah.
Aye, exactly. I'll play as much as I can. Obviously, in the winter, it's a little bit harder, but I'll still play a little bit.
Okay, good. Right, well, I won't keep you much longer, Scott, but I appreciate you giving some of your time.
No problem.
To speak to us about that, and obviously for us to catch up as well for a couple of years.
Yep. Absolutely.
Not doing so. So I'll kind of go through this a little bit and then tweak it, and I'll just make sure I give you a nod when we go live and we test against, get you up against Joe Rogan at the top of the podcast.
Who knows, mate? Hopefully. No, it's been a pleasure, Cal. Thank you very much for having me on. And I hope your listeners enjoy it.
All right. Cheers, buddy. Take it easy.
No problem at all. Take care, mate.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nattering with the Knights. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please reach out to your PE teacher if you have any feedback or ideas about topics you would like to see and hear about in the future. In the meantime, have a great week, and we will see you next time.